The Womanity Project. Let's talk about gender. Genders. Gender? Gender equality. And today I want to begin with a hello, everyone. Yoo-hoo! Trying to be as positive as possible.
Hello, everyone.
So welcome to the Womanity Project Live. I am Aurélie Harp.
And I'm Celine Rosenthal, and you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn.
Okay, so we were supposed to talk about women in sports.
We were supposed to.
But
then the last couple of days after the election results, we just felt like we all needed to heal.
Yes.
A little bit. It was quite an upset.
Yes. Shocker. Like, I think we're going to talk very personally like how we felt yesterday. We're more than happy for everybody to react. Our new call-in, sorry, 718-928-9732. Okay, just to let you know, everybody, this is kind of the first time we do this kind of live. Usually we're very prepared. We have an interview. We talk about things. Today, it's really going to be a heart-to-heart conversation.
And we really thought that this was the time for it, if ever there was one. Just after the events of the past couple of days, it felt like we really needed to get a chance to talk about some of the issues that are plaguing this country. I mean, I hear there's a lot of fear out there, and I'm feeling it myself.
Yep. And at the same time, I realized as well that thinking about why we do the Womanity Project and what is the purpose of it, it's really, yesterday it struck me. I was like, how come there is an entire part of the population that I don't understand, or I don't talk to, or I judge, or I despise, or I hate, or, you know, all these kind of feelings. And then all of a sudden you're like, what is the problem? I'm always kind of listening and talking to the people I know or who are like thinking like me. It's really what the Womanity Project is about, like to stretch, right? To go out of our comfort zone.
And to cross the aisle, as it were, to make sure that we're all having the conversation that every part of our humanity and every part of the womanity is being heard. And I think that one of the things that came so strongly into focus for me yesterday was that even after all of these polls that we had seen predicting so strongly that the majority of the population supposedly was for Hillary Clinton, that there was this, as people have been calling it, silent majority that have been screaming to be heard, that have felt like they have been so underserved by the government and the establishment at large that they have voted in this way. And I feel like it's our responsibility to listen.
Absolutely. Even though I would just say 200,000 people voted for Hillary, more than, you know, more than for Trump. Technically, technically she won.
Oh, the Electoral College.
Yeah, that's another thing that struck me again.
And welcome to America.
No, but like really, because I studied the American political system. I thought I understood it, and then yesterday again, I was like, oh no, I didn't understand. It's you know, this feeling in New York. Does it make sense to go to vote because your vote is not as useful as it is on the swing state? It's like, you know, you're like, it's really a system, a democratic system that is not made to take risks. Let's put it this way.
Well, it's interesting because, and I've had a number of friends come up to me and talk about this as well, the system and its checks and balances kind of don't support this idea, seemingly, that we've been raised on, that every single individual vote and every single individual voice counts. You know, if you come from a state where it's predominantly one way or the other, it kind of does feel personally like your vote doesn't really matter that much, which is horrible, honestly.
It is.
And, you know, we we've, you know, been racking our brains. And I think Aurélie brought in kind of a really interesting clip.
Yeah.
That, you know, because to me, and I know that I had a number of friends who work on both sides of the aisle, but the thing that kept being articulated to me was how on earth was a person who was, you know, a policy nerd and had a ridiculous amount of experience and lifelong dedication to public service, but happened to be female, how was that somehow more abhorrent to people than somebody who really did come from outside of the system and didn't have the experience and threw around racial epithets. You know, how on earth did that happen? Orly, what is this clip exactly? Found it from Full Frontal?
Yeah, Samantha Bee. And I've been writing about it. Like, a lot of people hate Hillary.
Vehemently hate.
It's like we say the miroir aux sorcières. Like, you know, this mirror when you can put anything you hate, it's like, it's her. And all of a sudden, the other day, Samantha Bee like had a clip on the journey of Hillary, and I was like, "This is so true. We are responsible, and women included. Women, by the way, voted for Trump. Like, you know."
So let's take a listen.
Let's listen to it and let's discuss.
Now, if you don't like how Hillary Clinton seems like a fake politician robot, here's how that happened. Spoiler alert: it was our fault. We created her by slowly tearing down a badass feminist named Hillary Rodham. Let's take the Full Frontal TARDIS back 4 or 5 decades and meet her. After hearing Martin Luther King speak and attending the 1968 Democratic National Convention, young Hillary Rodham became the first woke white girl. She started adult life fierce as fuck.
Her classmates selected Hillary the first student at Wellesley to give a commencement address.
For too long, our leaders have viewed politics as the art of the possible. And the challenge now is to practice politics as the art of making what appears to be impossible possible.
She was called a voice of her generation.
I guess the Wellesley grads were applauding so loud they couldn't hear how shrill that voice was. After graduating Yale Law School as one of 27 women in a class of 235, Hillary had to decide, should I run for Congress or save this hillbilly from his own wandering dick for the next couple decades? I swear to God, if she'd decided the other way, history might have been very different. And today's 30-year-olds wouldn't have learned what sex was from the Star Report. What possessed the voice of a generation to leave Washington?
Hillary had a number of high-powered opportunities in Washington, but she had a secret of her own.
She fails the D.C. bar exam and is devastated by it.
When I learned that I had passed in Arkansas but failed in D.C., I thought that maybe my test scores were telling me something.
She said she believed it was a sign that she should move to Arkansas to be with Bill.
Oh my God, woman! You fail one test and decide to go become a politician's wife in Arkansas? Most women only do that when they fail a pregnancy test. If she thought a human Free to Be You and Me album was gonna be embraced with open arms by a state where pigs are headwear, she soon learned otherwise.
She looked different. She insisted on using her maiden name.
Does it concern you that maybe other people feel that you don't fit the image that we have created for the governor's wife in Arkansas? It possibly could have cost him a few votes because your name is not the same as his.
I'm sure that it probably did, and I regret that very much.
Yes, the voters made their opinion clear. If Hillary Rodham wanted to keep her last name, she should have married a relative like everyone else in Arkansas. This was in 1979, just 5 years after women were allowed to get their own credit cards, 4 years after women were allowed to serve on all juries, and 3 years after women were allowed to be bionic in public. When Bill lost his re-election bid after raising taxes, it was obvious whose fault it was.
I think Bill would be the first to say he made some real mistakes that first term.
Well, now, you may have made some mistakes in that first term, too. I have in mind for the fact that you were first lady, but you kept your maiden name.
And that's where Hillary learned her resting fuck the press face. So the good wife caved and got an Arkansas makeover, which, contrary to popular opinion, does not involve cutting the sleeves off your shirt, buying a pack of Winston's, and getting a Confederate flag tattoo.
She became Mrs. Clinton, and she changed her looks. And she started taking more of an interest in clothing.
And, of course, she cut her hair. It was like, now we have a first lady.
Just to put it to rest, I will forever be known as Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Oh, girl, don't say forever. Just say the word in January and Loretta Lynch can serve that cheating son of a bitch divorce papers while Tim Kaine changes the locks on the White House door.
Oh, Lord, she really went through a lot more than even I realized. And I am one of those 30-year-olds that learned what sex was from the Star Report. I'm one of them. My goodness.
No, but like it's really interesting because for me it really shows like how and I think it was C.K. Louis like just laughing about it before, but just saying the abuse this woman received all the time, and it's just like, how do you react when everything the others are doing, it's your fault? It's like, how dare you as a woman to make decisions or to go out of your comfort zone? And just to give you an example, like, again, I'm going to talk about my personal experience. Anytime you try to speak up and write something, it's, you know, an article, and to try to be more public and about your thoughts, it's the comments and what you hear is really interesting because it's always very violent.
Yes.
Very violent, very sexist in terms of, oh my God, like, you're so stupid, or how dare you, or like, not to say the B word, bitch. and at the same time, like, you learn how to not care about that and to say, okay. But that means as well that I guess there is a part of you that is a bit afraid to not please.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that for Hillary, like, she became even more conservative because of, you know, this people forcing her, or society forcing her, to be in the frame, you know?
To be the proper first lady. That's it's and, you know, it's interesting to me because I so often, one of the big praises, shall we say, that I heard folks saying about Trump was, he's so honest. He calls it like it is. He's not afraid of what anyone thinks. If I had had, you know, we hear back back in the early 90s, back in the 80s, she tried that and it seemed to be political suicide for her. Even just keeping her own name, having a haircut that was displeasing, pursuing her profession, that her calling it the way that she saw it meant that people hated her. Him calling it the way that he saw it meant that people said he's strong.
Yeah.
It's just an interesting double standard.
No, for sure.
But, you know, I think, I'm not sure if everybody had a chance to listen to Hillary's speech yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think that she made a lot of really good points and pleas to the American people. And what she did say was that we owe it to ourselves and our nation to have a peaceful transfer of power, and we owe it to our country to give Donald Trump the benefit of the doubt and to allow him at least the chance to lead us properly. So I intend to heed the call reticently. It was even hard for me to say that, actually, if you noticed.
Yesterday I wrote it, and you see that I forced myself to wrote, President Trump, President Trump, President Trump, President Trump.
I mean, it's terribly odd, but, you know, that's one of the features of our democracy, is that it is for the people and by the people. And as hard as it is for me to accept that New York is not the center of the world and does not speak for everybody, it doesn't. You know, we have a wide and vast and highly polarized country. We have the city and the country all kind of mashed together in a land that is kind of the size of Europe in its entirety.
No, true. And I think as well, like, because we, you know, we always make the comparison between what happened on Tuesday night and the Brexit.
Right.
And in France right now, like, a lot of people are you know, wondering what's going to happen in the next election in May, because we have, it's a very similar situation where on one side, the world is changing, and the reality is there are more and more machines. The physical world is disappearing, so we don't need men to carry stuff anymore because the machines are going to do that for us.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, where the capitalism became very aggressive and very corporatist, where a lot of people feel powerless. And what struck me all the time is, like, a democracy, when you think about it, is not cool. It's stable, but in order for that to work, that means everybody needs to be very involved. And we all agree that when you are hopeless, it's really hard to get involved and to believe in the fact that days are going to be better. And that's something that, unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know, Donald Trump, like Obama did like 8 years ago, managed to catch and to channel and to just say, don't worry, I have your back, I'm strong, and mm-hmm. I'm going to take care of you.
Well, and what was so fascinating is that both Obama and Trump ran on a platform of change.
Yep.
They both proposed, the status quo is not working for you, I will make it change so that it will. And both times change won out. So I think that it's curious. It seems that a part of the American psyche yeah. seems to be on that forward motion. And honestly, it's oddly hopeful that there is a possibility for things to get better with change,
absolutely.
Which is kind of counterintuitive for some of the platforms that he was running on. But another thing that I thought was really interesting yesterday is that I had a lot of friends who have young children kind of talking about, how do I explain this to my kids? How do I explain this to my daughter? You know, who, especially like very, very young children who've been looking at this and have been so excited that there was a woman running for president. And up until, you know, two nights ago, had really been led to believe that that was going to be a thing that happened. You know, like, how do you tell them that Santa Claus isn't real?
Yeah.
The morning after the election.
Yeah, because every kid, especially in New York and Brooklyn, went with their parents just thinking they were voting for the first woman president. You know?
Right. And I think Hillary had something really beautiful to say about that, so I'd like to play it for you now.
Let's do that.
And to the young people in particular, I hope you will hear this. I have, as Tim said, spent my entire adult life fighting for what I believe in. I've had successes and I've had setbacks, sometimes really painful ones. Many of you are at the beginning of your professional, public, and political careers. You will have successes and setbacks too. This loss hurts, but please never stop believing that fighting for what's right is worth it. Keep up these fights now and for the rest of your lives. And to all the women, and especially the young women, who put their faith in this campaign and in me, I want you to know that nothing has made me prouder than to be your champion. I know we have still not shattered that highest and hardest glass ceiling, but someday someone will, and hopefully sooner than we might think right now. And to all the little girls who are watching this, never doubt that you are valuable and powerful and deserving of every chance and opportunity in the world to pursue and achieve your own dreams. Finally, I am so grateful for our country and for all it has given to me. I count my blessings every single day that I am an American. And I still believe, as deeply as I ever have, that if we stand together and work together with respect for our differences, strength in our convictions, and love for this nation, our best days are still ahead of us. Because, you know, I believe we are stronger together and we will go forward together. And you should never, ever regret fighting for that.
Wow.
Hearing it again and again, I'm so emotional.
I know, we're crying in the studio. Which, I mean, you have to laugh or you'll cry.
Exactly. I want to tell you a personal story. Yesterday, I woke up and I was completely numb and completely really paralyzed and angry. And angry at myself, too, for not being more active or for not being more listening or for more, you know, whatever. And angry at my parents-in-law because they voted for Trump and I knew it. And I tried to convince them, which was kind of crazy and whatever. But the one thing that then I remembered was, okay, you know what? Again, the most important is to keep a conversation. It would be ridiculous and childish of me to just shut them down and to judge. And because when Obama won, they didn't do that. They accepted it.
Mm-hmm.
They welcomed my ideas. They never said anything against me. So I decided to call my mother-in-law and just to say, listen, I don't know why I'm calling you really, but it's to make sure that we can break the ice and to say, I love you. I'm very sad. I'm even devastated, but that's it. That's the reality. And the day passed and she called me like a few hours later and to say, Aurélie, I'm so sorry because I woke up this morning and I knew you would be devastated. And mm-hmm. I knew that a lot of people feel your way because you're passionate and I so like that about you. And you made me think. And to be honest, yes, my husband was very proud of electing Trump. I voted for Trump. I'm not proud. I really could not vote for Hillary because for me, she represents the past. And, but I'm with you. I cannot wait to vote for the first female president. And let's think about it together. And like, who could that be? And so, and we had like a beautiful conversation for an hour and a half, crying and laughing at the same time, like being very honest with each other. When I told her, I respect your choice at the same time, I see the change. Now I'm really worried, not even for the U.S. I'm worried for the world because it's not good news.
Well, and I feel like for better or for worse, since World War II, especially, the United States has taken a place in the national arena that has been incredibly central. And so we've tied ourselves in such an integral way to so many different countries and political systems and economies that it is truly frightening when something like this happens to the United States.
Absolutely.
Oddly. And also we are a country of immigrants. You know, everybody who is an American is also from someplace else. You can't, I mean, anytime that you have a conversation with somebody new, inevitably sometime you're going to say, well, where's your family from?
Absolutely.
Because you know that it's not from here. You know, it's going to be from Italy or Poland or France or England or Scotland,
or Mexico.
Ireland, Mexico,
Yemen.
Argentina, Yemen, India, China, the Philippines, Japan, every place. There we have this amazing melting pot. And
absolutely.
You know,
and I'm going.
It's scary for the world.
It is, and I'm going to say it because I think now that's for me my mission number one. And the, like again, Trump. You know what? By the way, the European Union. Like everybody called him to say, could you please just come because we have a few things to tell you. It's going to be briefed, but it's the people. It's the elected people behind. Like between the Pence, the Giuliani, the list is very long. That's where we have to be so vigilant because this is no joke. These people declared, and they're going to do it, to do everything they can to make sure that it's a conservative, ultra-conservative, anti-LGBT,
anti-choice,
anti-immigration. So that's, I would say, on the local level. Mm-hmm. How come people could have still voted for the old Senate? They want to change and they voted for the old same. That's what worries me.
Well, and I think that that's our galvanizing call to you today because we do need to wrap up.
Yeah.
you know, if you're angry, if you're sad, if this didn't turn out the way that you wanted it to, get involved in your local government.
Yes.
You are the people who are the American populace. You can make change and yourselves. We can do it together.
And immigrants can do that too.
Immigrants, we get the job done. Sorry, I have to quote Lin-Manuel or I would not be the musical theater nerd that I am. But you have been listening to The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn. And our question for you this week is, tell us about your voting experience. You can like us and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Womanity Project. You can support us and sponsor us on our page at radiofreebrooklyn.com/show/the-womanity-project. And we'd like to say thank you to
all of you.
All of you for being part of our community. And of course, to Radio Free Brooklyn.
Tune in next week, The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn, every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time.
And this song that I want to play for all of you is called The Morning Comes. It's by a band, Delta Ray, and I think that it's got a really powerful message. So this is for all of you. Au revoir tout le monde. À la semaine prochaine.
I found a good woman, I found a job that pays. The tide comes in, I watch it all wash away. But I'm keeping it steady, and that's just how I was raised. Head held up, walking tall into each breaking wave. 'Cause the devil's in the details, and he's taking his toll. Sending good men down the foot trails of some lost only souls. And I say, oh, oh, rain don't change the sun. Jealous is the night when the morning comes. But it always comes.